Great. Thanks a lot for the introduction. Hello, everyone. Thanks for coming. This is going to be a talk about improving the performance and robustness of peer-to-peer live streaming systems. And this is joint work with collaborators at the University of Washington, the University of Massachusetts, Yale, and PPLive. So I'm going to start with something that probably everyone here knows. People are watching TV on their computers. What you might not know is that some of the most popular means for distributing internet TV are based on peer-to-peer content distribution. They use peer-to-peer as their fundamental technique for achieving scalability. PPLive is one example of one of these systems, and it's based out of China, and it has over 20 million active users worldwide. Now, as with any peer-to-peer system, the scalability of PPLive depends crucially on users contributing capacity to the system. But in the current protocol design, there's no reward for contribution whatsoever. So the person that contributes to the most to the system receives the same service priority as someone who contributes nothing at all. And that brings us to the key question of this work, which is how can we provide contribution incentives for peer-to-peer live streaming? And we're going to use PPLive as a concrete example to ground our work. Now, there are three parts to this talk. First, how is live streaming different? We've seen a lot of work in recent years that examines contribution incentives in peer-to-peer systems, specifically bulk data distribution systems like BitTorrent. And you might hope that we can just reuse many of the same tricks that we've developed for bulk data distribution and apply them directly and get incentives in live streaming. It turns out that's not the case for a few reasons that we'll talk about. The challenges of achieving incentives in live streaming motivate the design of contracts, a set of changes to PPLive that we've designed and implemented. And finally, in the end of the talk, I'll summarize key results from our evaluation that shows that contracts not only strengthens contribution incentives, but also improves performance. So just to make sure we're all on the same page, let's start with a quick summary of how PPLive works. The way the system is designed, a data source emits live video data, and it breaks it up into blocks. That's what's shown here. The source is labeled an S. As clients join the system, they're randomly matched by a coordinator, and blocks are distributed roughly in order. Once peers receive blocks, they can redistribute them to others, and old blocks are discarded as new ones are produced. Now, you might be saying to yourself, wow, this looks a lot like BitTorrent, another system that you might know well. And you'd be right. The wire level details of the protocol are very similar to BitTorrent. Now, since we're interested in contribution incentives, the next immediate question is, can we just take a page from BitTorrent and apply tit for tat to PPLive and gain some sort of incentives for live streaming? Well, so can we? In a word, no. And let's talk about why. Tit-for-tat is part of a broad range of incentive strategies that are based on bilateral reciprocation. And the service policy for bilateral reciprocation schemes is, I'm going to give you service proportional to how much service you're able to give me. So I'll give you some data if you give me some data. Now, why won't strategies based on bilateral exchange work in the case of live streaming? There are three reasons: capacity heterogeneity, limited trading opportunities, and the lack of a compelling reward. Let's talk about each of these in turn. First, capacity heterogeneity. A defining feature of peer-to-peer workloads is that the upload capacity distribution of users is highly skewed, and PPLive is no exception. As a concrete example of this, in the measured capacity distribution of PPLive users, we observe that the top 10% of users contribute 58% of the total system capacity. Now, when it comes to contribution incentives and schemes to achieve contribution incentives, there's a trade-off between utilization and how many users your system will admit. So what we'd like is to be operating at the top right of this plot here, where all users are watching the live stream at the maximum possible quality. So we're maximizing capacity utilization, and we're also admitting every user into the system. Now, what happens if we try to apply the simplest possible bilateral exchange scheme in this environment, balanced exchange? So, in other words, you get to obtain only as much data from the system as you contribute to the system, and this happens through bilateral negotiation. Well, the trade-off in this case is pretty discouraging. On one hand, if we want to maximize capacity utilization, we can set the stream quality to be the average capacity and maximize total utilization. But if we do this, we're going to exclude 86% of users that have an upload capacity that's less than that average. Now, on the other hand, suppose we want to admit 95% of users. That requires setting the stream rate at the fifth percentile of the upload capacity distribution. But if we do that, we'll be wasting 85% of the total system capacity. So while balanced exchange is simple, and it seems to provide some incentives, it doesn't seem ideal. Can we do better? So the most immediate relaxation we might consider is eliminating this balance assumption. So in other words, what if we try out imbalanced exchange? In these sorts of schemes, service isn't one for one, it's proportional to contribution. So the thing to remember is even if you relax this balance constraint, bilateral exchange schemes are still based fundamentally on opportunities for reciprocation. That is, I have some data that's of interest to you, and you have some data of interest to me, a trading opportunity. So to be effective, any scheme that's based on bilateral exchange depends on trading opportunities. But in live streaming, trading opportunities are rare. And to see why this is the case, just think about the way that data distribution is occurring. There's a synchronization effect. So data blocks are being produced from the source, and virtually all of the users are interested in that same very small set of blocks. So the outcome of this is that peers near the source have a monopoly on new blocks because they receive them very quickly after they're produced. And peers that are more distant from the source are at a perpetual trade imbalance. They just don't have very much data that's of interest to peers that are closer because all peers are interested in obtaining the same set of data at the same time, and some users are closer. So, again, in live streaming, there are fundamentally few trading opportunities. So to make this concrete, let's look at some data. What this graph shows is the opportunities for transfer between pairs of peers, and that's what's shown on the y-axis here. Now, the way we parameterize this is in terms of the absolute difference in the average distance from the broadcast source of each of those peers in the pair. Now, that's a mouthful, and it seems really complicated, but it's actually pretty simple. It's just a measure of how much closer one of the peers is than the other peer in the pair. So if two peers are at the same average distance from the source, this measure would be zero. And now we're considering two cases here. One where the transfers are completely unconstrained, only by data availability. So I'm willing to send you any data as long as you don't have it and are interested. And the other case is when we're imposing balanced exchange on the system. Now, there are two things to notice here. First is that the opportunities for reciprocation, trading that is, only arise when peers have a similar distance to the source. And that's what's indicated here by this downward slope when we insist on balanced exchange. And this agrees with our intuition. Again, if one peer is much further away than another peer with respect to the source, there just aren't going to be as many opportunities for them to trade mutually beneficial data. What we see instead is that most of the opportunities for data transfer are between peers that have a large imbalance of blocks to send. So in other words, very few opportunities for trading. And this too agrees with our intuition. That distant peer might not have anything with which to trade, but it needs virtually every block in the buffer of the peer that's closer to the source. This reflects the block monopoly of the closer peer. So again, trading opportunities are rare. So finally, what's the last challenge of achieving contribution incentives in peer-to-peer live streaming? Rewarding contribution. For bulk data, rewarding contribution is pretty straightforward. The reward for increasing your contribution rate is an increase in download rate. So give more, achieve faster downloads. But live streaming is inelastic. To watch the stream, all of the users that are participating in the system need to obtain data at the stream rate. And if you download it less than the stream rate, the playback quality degrades very quickly. And crucially, we can't reward users with improved download rates in live streaming because it's live. The data doesn't yet exist. There's nothing more to give them. So we can't increase download speeds, and we also can't decrease them. So how can we create a compelling reward? Addressing these challenges brings us to the next part of the talk, which is the design of contracts. Contracts is based on two key principles. First, we need to depart from bilateral exchange. Instead, clients are evaluated according to a single global evaluation contract that measures the global contribution across all peers to the system. The second key idea is to reward contribution with robustness by optimizing the overlay topology. Remember, we can't fiddle with download rates in the system. Instead, we're going to restructure the topology so that if the system becomes capacity constrained, contributors fail last. And doing this requires topology restructuring. I'll describe each of these in turn. So let's start with how we evaluate contributions. What would we like clients in the system to do? Well, as in any peer-to-peer system, contributions are required. So we need to track contributions to motivate users to contribute their capacity. But in live streaming, simply contributing is not enough. In live streaming, blocks have playback deadlines. Data's value changes over time and with distance from the source. So we want peers to not only contribute their capacity, but also to make effective contributions. That is, to contribute their capacity to peers with the greatest potential to redistribute that data quickly. So how we achieve both of these, we'll deal with one at a time. So first, contributing capacity. Remember, we're going to depart from bilateral exchange, and we're trying to track contributions globally. The way we do this in contracts is to introduce a lightweight accounting protocol that's based on cryptographically verifiable receipts. Now, the details are in the paper, but at a high level, what these allow us to do is to have some clients attest to the contributions that they've made to their peers. So in this example, as one is contributing data to two, periodically two is providing one with receipts that attest to that contribution. Now, what this allows one to do is demonstrate its contributions to peer two to other clients in the system. In this case, for example, E. So this takes care of tracking the raw amount of contributions that a peer makes in the system. But what about contribution effectiveness? In order to track this, we need more information. So in order to track effectiveness, what we're going to do is add some propagation to these receipts in the overlay. A client needs receipts not just from its peers, but also its peers of peers. So in contracts, each client gossips the receipts that it receives in a one-hop neighborhood of its directly connected peers. So for example, in this case, as 1 and 2 are exchanging data and receipts, 2 will periodically send to 1 the receipts that it obtains from its peers, in this case, 3 and 4. Now, what this allows 1 to do is demonstrate to E, another peer which is evaluating it, hey, not only am I a contributor in this system, which I can demonstrate to you because I have receipts from 2, but also I was making effective contributions because 2 was able to redistribute data to 3 and 4. Now, the way this translates to our local service policy is that clients prioritize service for peers that are the most effective. So that's how peers are evaluated. Now, how do we use this information to update the overlay topology? Well, based on the propagation of receipts, the peers in the system know about the contributions of more distant peers in their one-hop neighborhood. And among the set of peers that a client knows about, it preferentially connects to the highest capacity peers in this set, while pruning unproductive peers that have neither warranted service or provided data in the recent past. Now, universally applied, what this results in is high-capacity peers percolating towards the data source and more distant peers being pushed to the periphery of the mesh through attrition. Now, crucially, this structuring property is what provides incentives in the system. Because failures cascade, proximity to the source improves quality of service. Now, let's just think about this for a minute. What causes a block in a live streaming system to miss its playback deadline? Well, it's some disruption on the path between a peer and the data source. Now, the closer you are to the source, the less likely there is to be some disruption on this path. For instance, a user coming into the system, leaving the system, transient congestion, something like this. And in contracts, the way to move closer to the source to reduce this chance of disruption is to contribute capacity and increase your contribution. And this is exactly the incentive that we want to create. So that's an overview of how contracts provides incentives. Now let's change gears and discuss attacks. At its core, contracts is a reputation tracking mechanism. And a perennial challenge for reputation tracking mechanisms is collusion, wherein multiple peers in the system cooperate to subvert the intended incentives. So in contracts, we defend against this in 3 different ways. And I'll just have time to provide a high-level overview here. Again, more details are in the paper. First, PPLive is not completely distributed. There's a centralized coordinator at PPLive that can do things like limit identity creation on the basis of a more durable identifier, for example, via cell phone SMS. Second, we weight contributions when evaluating peers according to the diversity of the network addresses of the peers that are being contributed to. This takes advantage of the scarcity of IP addresses. So if you're colluding with a whole bunch of peers in the same subnet, those contributions will be weighted much less than contributions that have a diversity of network addresses. And finally, we use what we call a flow integrity check to limit the effectiveness of collusion on the basis of what we know about rates when it comes to live streaming. So for example, the incoming data rate of a peer, that is, how much data that peer claims to have received from any other, can exceed the stream data rate. Obviously, we know this. Second, the outgoing data rate from any peer can't exceed the upload capacity that was measured when that peer first joined the system. So at this point, I've described the key ideas in contracts design. Now let's take a look at performance. In this talk, I'm only going to have time to describe results that demonstrate that contracts improves performance and strengthens contribution incentives. In the paper, we consider many more aspects of the system: computational and network overhead of our scheme, a comparison with other related work, the convergence of the overlay topology, as well as the amount of overprovisioning that's required for robust performance and its relationship to loss rate. So first, the experimental setup. The results that I'll show are for a set of PPLive clients that are running on Emulab. And we modified PPLive to support two different strategies for providing contribution incentives. Obviously, we support contracts, but we're going to be comparing against rate-based tit-for-tat, which is essentially analogous to BitTorrent's incentive strategy. Again, just to remind you, this is, I'm going to give you service that's proportional to your contribution to me, a bilateral negotiation. This is a synthetic broadcast using 100 machines on Emulab. And we introduce churn in the system by having clients join the system regularly, separated by 10-second intervals, remaining in the system for 20 minutes, and repeating this process over 2 hours. The capacity of nodes in the system is assigned on the basis of a measured distribution of over 90,000 users of PPLive. So, first, baseline performance of PPLive. What this graph shows is, on the x-axis, the fraction of blocks that are received by the playback deadline. This is essentially the loss rate, so you want to be over to the right. That improves your playback quality. And what the y-axis shows is the cumulative fraction of peers with a given level of performance. So just to take an example point on this graph to help you read it, what this data point is showing is that 28% of peers receive 90% of their blocks by the playback deadline. Now, crucially, you might think that this is pretty crummy performance, but the crucial thing about all of these experiments is that we've chosen the stream rate to exercise capacity constraints in the system. It would be easy to achieve loss-free playback if we simply over-provisioned the system dramatically, but that wouldn't be particularly informative. Now, the key thing to notice in this baseline performance is that only 13% of users experience loss-free playback with unmodified PPLive. Now, what happens if we apply tit-for-tat? You can see here that the range of performance widens significantly. So some users are experiencing much worse performance. And you'd expect this when applying any incentive scheme. But for the majority of users, things seem to be getting worse. What's happening here? Well, essentially, this reflects the block monopoly and trade imbalance that I alluded to earlier in the talk. Shown here on the left are distant peers that can't obtain enough data to trade, regardless of their capacity. And this is disabling for overall performance, because in the case that a high-capacity peer joins the system, we need that high-capacity peer's contributions. Remember, the system is capacity-constrained. But because they're distant and they're at a perpetual trade imbalance, they can't obtain data quickly enough to replicate it widely to the other users of the system. Now, the other thing to notice is that for very high-capacity users that happen to be placed near the source, that's what's shown on the top right, things do get better, and better even than baseline PPLive. So we're improving performance for some users, the minority, but at the expense of performance for the vast majority of users in the system. What happens when we use contracts? Well, perhaps unsurprisingly, we substantially improve performance for all users, delivering loss-free playback that's 4 times that of unmodified PPLive. And now, why is that? What's happening here? Well, what contracts is doing is it's discovering the highest capacity peers in the mesh, and it's moving them to the proper location where they can be most effective, where that high capacity can be utilized to replicate data quickly. So contract substantially improves performance. But remember, we're also interested in incentives, so how does contracts do on that front? So what this graph shows is, on the y-axis, the fraction of blocks that are received by their playback deadlines. This is a measure of playback quality. And on the x-axis, we're varying the amount of capacity that a set of users has in the system. So we're measuring quality in terms of contribution. Now, in the case of incentives, what we'd like to see is an upward slope to data points on this graph. And in this case, each data point shows the average of all the users in the test broadcast with a given level of capacity. And what the error bars show is the full range of performance over 10 repeated trials. So there's a few things to notice here. We're comparing again tit for tat and PPLive with contracts. In the case of tit for tat, it does offer some reward for increasing contribution. Again, you can see this upward trend to the data points. But the range of performance over repeated trials is quite wide, right? And the incentive is, in some sense, pretty weak. If you double your contribution, the amount of loss rate that you receive is, in some cases, roughly the same as your original level of contribution. In contrast, the performance improvement when using contracts is both more consistent and more pronounced. So by more consistent, what I mean is the error bars here are much smaller. That means that the range of performance that a client sees for a given level of contribution is much less. And the reward that a client sees in response to increasing its contribution is much more significant. That's higher points on the y-axis, which is loss rate. So in short, contract significantly strengthens contribution incentives. So in summary, we've seen how live streaming exhibits fundamentally new challenges for fostering peer-to-peer contribution incentives. To address these challenges, we've designed and implemented a system called Contracts, which is a set of protocol modifications to PPLive that both improve performance and strengthen contribution incentives. Contracts is based on two key ideas: an evaluation contract rather than bilateral exchange, and topology restructuring that rewards contributions with improved quality of service. That concludes my talk. Thanks for your attention, and I'd be happy to take questions.
What aspects of your system do you think would change, and do you think you could do significantly better?
So I'll just repeat the question because I think the first part might have gotten cut off. So the question was about what's the difference between live streaming and on-demand streaming. One way to look at live streaming is as an extreme case of on-demand streaming, where all the users are arriving at the same time. I think that on-demand streaming introduces new challenges, but it also presents new opportunities. So the problem is both harder and easier on depending on how you look at it. So one of the things that makes the problem easier is that you have users in the system that have a large amount of data blocks that are of interest to users that join. So if you're at the start of playback, you're interested in obtaining a whole bunch of old data blocks. In live streaming, that's not true. And a lot of the challenges stem from the range of blocks that you're interested in being very small. Of course, on-demand also makes the problem harder because you have to incorporate the different value that each peer places on different blocks based on its playback point, right? So, for example, some blocks that are extremely old that most of the users in the system have not no value, but less value than more recent blocks. So I think that makes the service policy a bit more complicated.
These improvements look nice. I'm wondering if you've talked to PPLive and seen if there are any roadblocks in your work that might prevent them from wanting to deploy it. So what are the disadvantages?
Okay. So I should emphasize that we did this work in cooperation with PPLive. And so our relationship with them is pretty good. The obstacles to deployment, we're already actually working with them to deploy a bandwidth match tracker, which is one component of our system. But the obstacles to deploying the client-side modifications are exactly what you'd expect, which is just there needs to be a lengthy process of testing the set of modifications, rolling it out slowly, there's a software development cycle, so on and so forth.
Chris Lejniewski-Loss, MIT. This is really interesting work. I was wondering if you can identify what the optimal attacker strategy would be for a selfish attacker on a system like this. You know, say I want to, I don't care about optimizing overall performance. I just want to optimize my own performance.
So you can imagine a bunch of attacks against the system, and I should emphasize that we're not claiming that contracts is strategy proof. Our main goal with this project was essentially just to understand the problem space and work towards a solution. Did you have a specific attack in mind?
No, I was just wondering if you did.
Well, perhaps unsurprisingly, I'm not aware of any attack which completely undercuts the paper that we wrote. But we can talk about some of the things that we have been thinking about offline. Essentially, most of the attacks that we consider in the paper revolve around the limited effectiveness of collusion. And so if you can amass a large set of IP addresses, you have a large set of diverse network endpoints, and you can rope in some users that don't really care about watching the video stream, but they just want to boost your reputation in the system, there are some attacks which might be moderately effective. We haven't considered those quantitatively in the paper. But again, just to go into the details, we'll have to talk more offline. They're pretty involved.
Thanks.
Sure.
Hi, Steven Stribloin, area. I was actually thinking about a kind of attack. So assume you have a set of peers with a big upload capacity, and so they move up into your tree. And then what happens if those peers are colluding and at some point they just all disconnect at the same time? So you would have some kind of churn at the very root of your system. So what happens then?
Okay. So one thing I should emphasize is that this is not a tree-based system. The peers are organized into a mesh. So there's plenty of path redundancy in the system. But your point is still well taken, that if a large group of users join the system and they contribute so much data that they all percolate towards the top, well, in some sense, that good standing is theirs to lose. And if they all simultaneously disconnect from the system, I suspect there would be a pretty significant service disruption.
So this is not something you have experimented with?
This is not something that we consider explicitly in our experimental work. But again, if you're contributing to the system, you're following the protocol, and you achieve a good position in the mesh, that's exactly what we want you to do. And then if you simply cooperate with a whole bunch of other users to concurrently disconnect, we have to treat that like any other service disruption.
Agreed. But you contribute for some time, but then at time X, then everyone disconnects. So your overlay somehow has to recover from that.
This is the overlay can always recover connectivity because there's this centralized coordinating tracker at PP Live, which on demand will provide users with a random set of peers. So if a bunch of your peers suddenly disconnect, I suppose in the limit, if all of your peers disconnect, you can always recover connectivity in the overlay graph by returning to the source.
And in terms of performances? The TCP connections are there, but there is no data streaming because those peers that move up don't have the data that the others want.
Again, I agree with you. There will be a service disruption, and the system will recover. We haven't evaluated this particular case, but we can talk more offline. So I can't say quantitatively exactly how long the service disruption would be.
Thank you.
Thanks. I think with that, it's...